We're holding in Rav Shira Gaon, the fourth chapter, the way this book breaks it down. Rav Shira Gaon has been discussing Rebbe's compilation of the Mishnah, and he's been showing how the Mishnah existed prior to Rebbe, and Rebbe really just organized the Mishnah. We had seen last week how Rebbe added certain comments within the Mishnayot, when the Mishnah would give certain examples. So Rebbe added, these are just examples that the rabbis gave. That's Rebbe's footnote or commentary. Rebbe is Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. He is the one who lived shortly after the destruction of the Second Temple, and he compiled the Mishnah. So now the Rav Shira Gaon is giving another example of something that really Rebbe compiled, even though most of the Mishnayot were existent prior to Rebbe, but this is a tractate which Rebbe compiled, and it is the tractate of Eduyot. And we're going to review something which we saw earlier, the history of the tractate Eduyot. And the history goes as follows. The Gemara in Brachas, Daf Chaf Zayin, Amud Beit, quotes the following story. A certain student came before Rabbi Yoshua, and he asked him, Tfilat Arvit Reshut or Chova, the evening prayer, is it mandatory as is every other prayer? Or are we slightly more lenient about the evening prayer, so that if there's another mitzvah that one would have to do, so we'd say the evening prayer we're more lenient about. Now everyone agrees that saying Shema in the evening is biblical. That wasn't what he was talking about. He was talking about the Shmoneh Esrei, the standing, the evening prayer, not the Shema of the evening. So Amalo, Rabbi Yoshua answered him, Reshut. It's permissible. It's a lower level. It's not as mandatory as every other prayer. Now, who is this Rabbi Yoshua? Rabbi Yoshua was the great sage Rabbi Yoshua ben Hanania. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham who was very, very kind and very patient and very poor. He was a blacksmith. But he was a great, great sage. And during his time, there was a young Nasi, young prince, young head of the Jewish people at the time, and his name was Rabban Gamliel. Now, Rabban Gamliel had different times where he disagreed with Rabbi Yoshua, and every time he forced his opinion. There was one time when they disagreed when Yom Kippur would fall out, and Rabban Gamliel had a certain tradition from his forefathers which Rabbi Yoshua didn't have, and Rabbi Yoshua ruled that Yom Kippur should be on one day, and Rabban Gamliel ruled it should be the next day. So Rabbi Gamliel was head of the court, and the court ruled for all of Israel to go like Rabbi Gamliel. So Rabbi Gamliel sent word to Rabbi Yoshua, I don't want the situation where people are thinking that there's a breach within the high court. I want you to show everyone that you're accepting my opinion. When Yom Kippur falls out according to your calculations, I want you to come before me holding your stick, holding your money, doing public actions to show that you accept my ruling. And Rabbi Yeshua was devastated until finally his disciples convinced him that there's a source for Rabbi Gamliel and that really Rabbi Gamliel has the power to do what he's doing and that he has to accept Rabbi Gamliel's halachic ruling, and he did it. And when he shows up at Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel gets up in his honor and he kisses him on his forehead and he says, welcome my Rebbe and my disciple. My Rebbe, because undoubtedly you're smarter than me. And my disciple, because nonetheless you accepted the fact that I'm head of the court and you accepted my ruling. But there were quite a few stories like this where Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua differed in opinion, and Rabbi Gamliel forced his opinion in a very strong manner. And Rabbi Gamliel was a youngster, he was the head of the court, and he had a very strong tradition, and he was a great rabbi, but nonetheless he was relatively young. And Rabbi Yeshua was very, very old. Rabbi Yeshua was from the old school, he was a disciple of a disciple of Hillel's. So you're talking about two generations down from Hillel. Rabbi Yeshua was the disciple of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was a disciple of Hillel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So we're talking two generations. Whereas Rabbi Gamliel was five generations down from Hillel. So that just gives us a picture. Hillel had a son named Shimon. Shimon had a son named Gamliel. Gamliel had a son named Shimon, who had a son named Gamliel. And that's this Rabbi Gamliel. So we're talking five generations down. It was his great-great-great-great-grandson, this Rabbi Gamliel. And Rabbi Yeshua was a disciple of a disciple. So the difference here in age must have been pretty great. Rabbi Yeshua must have been like 80, 90 years old. Rabbi Gamliel must have been 25, 30. So After Rabbi Yoshua rules this student, who we're later going to see is Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, after he asks Rabbi Yoshua whether the evening prayer, what level of obligation it has, and Rabbi Yoshua has said that it's the lowest level, he goes to Rabbi Gamliel and he asks him, the evening prayer, is it Rishus or Chova? How do we view the evening prayer? Is it as mandatory as every other prayer or not? And Rabbi Gamliel responds, Chova. He tells him it is mandatory. So he asks him, but Rabbi Yoshua just told me the other way. It's not as mandatory as all the other prayers. So Rabbi Gamliel tells him, wait till the shield holders enter the Beis Medrash. Who are the shield holders? They are the rabbis. The rabbis are considered warriors when they're sitting and learning. They're all fighting one another. But notice they're not trying to kill. They're carrying shields. They're warriors who are defending a position back and forth, till we arrive at the truth. When the owners of the shields, meaning the rabbis, entered, so Rabbi Shimon got up and he asked, is the evening prayer mandatory or is it less than mandatory? And Rabbi Gamliel said, it is mandatory. No one says a word. Rabbi Gamliel asked the rabbis, is there anyone who disagrees with me? So Rabbi Yeshua tells him, no. Rabbi Yeshua himself says no. So Rabbi Gamliel asked him, but they told me in your name that you hold it's less than mandatory. Rabbi Yeshua was silent. So he told them, Yeshua, stand on your feet and they'll testify against you. Rabbi Yeshua stood up and Rabbi Yeshua said, if I were alive and he were dead, I could contradict him. But now that we're both alive, so one that's alive can't contradict someone else that's alive. He's here testifying against me. What was Rabbi Yeshua saying? What does he mean? If the other man wasn't here, he'd lie?
Or at least now they can, one person says something, you can say it back.
Well, he says, if he were dead, I could lie. Now that he's alive, I have to admit the truth. What's he saying? A great man like Rabbi Yeshua would lie? Sir Rabbi Feinstein once told me that the Gemara is teaching us an attitude we're supposed to have. Sometimes, we're pushing to the corner to tell the truth. And then, we can sometimes feel like, I'm a truthful person, of course I'll say the truth. I wouldn't lie. But we have to recognize that we can never be certain if we're so truthful. When we're pushed to the corner, we know that right now when we're pushed to the corner, we're going to be a truthful person. What kind of person would we be when we weren't pushed to the corner? We don't know. When Yaakov tells his wives, Rachel and Leah, he tells them, God appeared to me and told me it's time to go back to the land of Israel. So what do his wives tell him? They tell him, Halo nochiyot nechshavnu lo ki mecharanu. Our father treated us like Gentile women. He sold us. And he tried to steal all our money. And things are going so bad here. Of course you should listen to God. What does that mean? If their attitude is, of course you should listen to God, then why do they need all this introduction? Things are going so bad and our rotten, and our father is treating us in such a rotten fashion. Of course you should listen to God. So Rabbi Feinstein said, that's this principle. That when there are other causes, there are external factors which really are pushing us to go on this route, we have to be very careful before we attribute our decision to being God-fearing people. We have a tendency to say, I'm a God-fearing person, that's why I want this. But we have to know that when there are external factors, we can't be certain. Even these great people recognized, and they revealed to us that they recognized it about themselves, that when there are external factors, you can't be convinced. This oftentimes comes up in marriage. A couple has a disagreement, and one of the pair comes and says, I think that the Torah expects us to do one way. And in truth, that's an unfair claim. If it's true, okay, so we have to contend with what the Torah wants us to do in this situation. But oftentimes it's a situation where it's borderline. One can say that it's better, as far as the Torah is concerned, to go this way. One can say it's better to go the other way. And when one pulls the Torah to his side, one's making an unfair claim. One has to say, this is what I want. And as for what the Torah says, maybe the Torah is also saying this, let's verify. What Rabbi Yeshua is doing is Rabbi Yeshua is laying the cards on the table. He's saying, there's a man here testifying against me. If he wasn't here, maybe I'd lie. I'd like to think I wouldn't. But at this stage of the game, all we know is that when someone's standing here testifying something against me, I admit the truth. Rabbi Yeshua is being very careful not to claim any honor, to be very fair, and he's teaching us an attitude we're all supposed to have. And the human tendency is to go the other way, to try and justify that we're righteous and what we're doing is right because of the Torah, because we're God-fearing people. We're supposed to approach things the other way. I'm no gebetava. I have biases. I'm not impartial. I have partiality. I once had to sell a business. So I was selling it to a friend of mine. So I told him, look, I'm partial. I want to sell you the business. So I don't want you to trust what I'm saying. Here are the books. Look at the books. I happen to think it's a lousy business. That's why I'm leaving it. I'm going to try to be as honest as I can, but I have to tell you that as much as I'm going to try to dissuade you from taking on this business because I really want to be honest with you, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to be honest enough because I have an interest. I want to sell the business. So I'm going to try to overcome that interest and be fair. But I want to lay the cards on the table. You should know I have an interest in selling you the business. So even when I'm going to try to speak badly about the business, chances are I'm going to say it less harshly than I would if I wasn't partial. I'm partial. So that I learned from here, that when we're partial, we should lay the cards on the table. I'm partial. But don't ask me for advice whether you should take the business or not. Because I have to say, in all honesty, nah, it's not a good idea. But if I were your friend and I wasn't partial, then I'd probably say it even stronger. I can't be sure I'm being fair. So analyze it with someone else. Don't ask me for advice. I'm partial. So Rabbi Yeshua is saying, once he's around, so of course I'm going to tell the truth. Hopefully I would say the truth otherwise as well. So Rabbi Gamliel continued his teaching, and Rabbi Yeshua is standing there in front of everyone. Now, the people who came to the speech who were listening, they were getting upset. Here this old man is standing there, and this young Rabbi Gamliel is giving the shiur. And this is disrespectful. So finally, they had enough. They turned to the young, to Chutzpis. There was a man named Chutzpis who was he was the loudspeaker. In those days when the rabbi would give a speech, so the rabbi would whisper what he had to say, and there was someone standing next to him who had a loud voice, and he'd repeat it in a loud voice to the congregation. Sometimes rabbis would interfere with one another. Like the rabbi would tell the loudspeaker, say this and this is the law. And another rabbi who was sitting close to the loudspeaker would say, wait a second, I disagree with him. Don't say it that way. He didn't mean that. You misunderstood him. But we have sometimes interjections, like the court stenographer. They're about to write, wait, no, don't write it that way. I didn't mean it that way. So here, the human loudspeaker was Chutzpis. So the people came to Chutzpis and they said, stop doing your job. We don't want you to broadcast Rabbi Gamliel's teachings. And he paused. So they stopped the speech midway. And the student said, how long are we going to let Rabbi Gamliel get away with this? Last year on Rosh Hashanah, they had the argument when Yom Kippur would fall out. He forced his hand and made Rabbi Yeshua come forth like this, carrying his stick, his money, etc. When they had an argument in Bechoros, we have an argument... a story of Rabbi Tzadok, that Rabbi Tzadok had a firstborn, and again there was a disagreement, and again Rabbi Gamliel made Rabbi Yeshua stand before everyone, and he continued his teachings. Over here too, he's doing that thing. We can't let this go on. Let's remove Rabbi Gamliel from his post. So they remove Rabbi Gamliel from being the Nasi. Who should we place instead of him? If we place Rabbi Yeshua, so then he's the one that's going too far. That's like giving him a smack in his face. We don't want to hurt Rabbi Gamliel so much. He's the one who we contended with. We see here again the balance of the decision of the rabbis. They didn't say, let's give it in to Rabbi Gamliel, we'll make Rabbi Yeshua the new prince. They said, no, that'll be too hurtful to Rabbi Gamliel. We won't make Rabbi Yeshua the new one. Should we establish Rabbi Akiva? Now, Rabbi Akiva was a disciple of Rabbi Yeshua's. But Rabbi Akiva was a disciple who was so great that the Gemara says that he became a Talmud Chaver, a disciple who became like a friend. He became their equal. So they said, nope, because Rabbi Akiva comes from Gerim. He doesn't have forefathers whose merits will protect him. And when Rabbi Gamliel is hurting, so then in heavens, Rabbi Akiva might get punished. So who should we establish? We'll establish Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria is very wise. He'll be able to answer all our questions. He's very wealthy. If we need to send him to speak to the Roman emperor, he'll know how to do it. He knows how to deal with aristocracy. And he's 10 generations from Ezra, so he'll have the merits of his forefathers to protect him, so Rabbi Gamliel won't be able to harm him in heavens. So they asked Rav Lezer ben Azariah, you want to become the head of the head of the yeshiva? So Rav Lezer ben Azariah said, I have to go ask my wife. So he went to ask his wife, and she said, if this is the way they're behaving, that they remove the heads, so they'll remove you too one day. How long are you going to last? Why should he take a position where if they're firing, they'll fire you too? So he said, you know, do you say we shouldn't buy fine china because it breaks? You buy fine china as long as it lasts. You use it. So she told him, you don't have white hairs. You're 18 years old. It's disrespectful. You should be the rabbi. So God made a miracle. And that night he got 18 strands of white hairs. His beard became white. And that's what Rav Lezer ben Azariah says, I'm like a 70-year-old because suddenly he got white hairs. So seems like she agreed. Why is he asking her permission? So one understanding is he wants her advice. You have a good wife, take her counsel. But the question is, every question she asked, he had an answer. It doesn't seem like she added much. So maybe she did, because maybe if now if they fired him, he was prepared for it, because she said, hey, they might fire you. So he said, yeah, okay, I'll take it on with the knowledge that I might be fired, and we'll see. He was demoted shortly thereafter. So maybe she helped him. He was prepared for these things. But there's a different explanation that's brought. Every person has a certain obligation to his wife, how often he has to be home. Depending on his job, constitutes what obligation he has, how often he has to be home. His wife, part of the understanding in marriage is that a husband owes his wife to be home certain evenings. So Rav Lezer ben Azariah knew if he's taking on a new position, he's going to be the Nasi, he's going to be home less often. And when she married him, she didn't think she was marrying someone who's taking this position. So in order to accept this position where his wife would be losing, so to speak, I mean, on a day-to-day basis, she'd have less of him. So he said, I need her permission. I can't take on this position without asking her permission. If that's so then maybe we can see another insight by what happened here. He went and asked her permission. What does she think? He asked her counsel. Sometimes, if you want someone to agree to something, they have to feel like they're part of the decision. If you come in and you say, I want to do this, what do you think? So then a person automatically feels like you're coming with an attitude, you're coming with a position. And do I agree or don't I agree? Well, you're pushing me to the corner. I'm going to tell you not to be the chief rabbi. But if a person comes home and says, I didn't accept the position. They offered me the position. And I said, I can't do it without thinking it through with you. So then the wife says, gee, you're right. Let's think it through together. Then she feels like she's part of the decision. He's not forcing the decision upon her. She's thinking it through with him. If they're thinking it through, so then even though every claim she makes he has an answer for, but they together as a couple arrive at the conclusion and she accepts it and he does become the Nasi. Maybe that's part of another insight we can have from this story. So Rav Lezer ben Azariah becomes the Nasi, and the first thing they institute is that they allow any student who wants to come learn Torah may enter. Rabbi Gamliel had a policy that students had to be on a certain level before they could enter. If a student was truthful, his insides were like his outsides, he didn't just put on a yarmulke, but he really believed, he didn't just walk into Beis Medrash, but he kept everything he learned. If students were on a very high level, so then they could enter the academy. The first thing Rabbi Lezer ben Azariah did was he removed the guard from the entrance to the academy. He said anyone that wants to enter to learn can enter. And on that day, they added to the academy many, many benches, either 400 benches or 700 benches. So thousands of students joined the academy on that day. And the rabbis, having these added students and added sources of knowledge, were able to verify many, many halachos that hadn't been verified earlier. So much so that from that day's or that period's learning, they compiled a whole new tractate of new testimonies that they got from the new students who had different traditions. And that compilation was the tractate of Eduyos, testimonies. And that's what Rav Shir Agon is bringing us to the story for, to point out that there were new tractates that evolved. such as this tractate of testimonies, which is really, what is this tractate? It's testimonies of what the ancient rabbis held, which different students had, but these students weren't on the highest level. They couldn't enter the academy when Rabbi Gamliel was head of the academy. But when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah became head of the academy, so these students were able to enter and give their testimony, and from their testimony, we were able to put together a whole new tractate called Testimonies, called Eduyot. And that's what Rav Shira Gaon taught us today, that on the day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah became the Nasi, the prince, so they had this change of policy, and when they changed this policy, so they got so much more learning done, and they were able to verify so many laws that they were able to put together this whole new tractate of Eduyot.